Archmaester Rigney once wrote that history is a wheel, for the nature of man is fundamentally unchanging. What has happened before will, perforce, happen again.
Welcome to 2C1C, a Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5.
Yeah. Nice little literature nod there for anybody that catches what's up. That's Martin's nod to Robert Jordan.
Ooh.
Wheel of Time.
Oh,
history
I get
is
it.
A wheel is how all those books always open.
Hmm.
Plus, Robert Jordan wasn't his real name. I believe his real name, if I remember right, was James Rigney. Something like that. I just mainly recall that Robert Jordan was just a pen name.
Hmm.
Hmm.
There you go. Random George R. R. Martin fact of the day for you.
It was James Rigney.
I think so.
Yep. It was. I have Wikipedia pulled up.
There you go.
Oh.
The internet says so.
Wikipedia knows all.
You know, if we use that more, we would seem so much more well-read and worldly. We just cheated, had the internet up all the time.
I mean, that's what I do. If you don't, you're doing it wrong.
Oh, well. Maybe that's why everyone talks about how well liked you are. Like, Will just always seems to know what's going on.
Yeah, he seems like such a well-read fellow.
And George R. R. Martin, apparently not a pen name.
Correct.
I just assumed that it was.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, RR, like, what the shit is that? Nope, it was.
Stands for Reading Railroad.
True fact. I believe Wikipedia supports that.
Hmm.
Man, I miss the good old days when you could just make Wikipedia say whatever the hell you wanted.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the days of being an asshole, but they're not quite over. Just over in the Wikipedia world.
I mean, I don't know if I was an asshole, but it was fun to add, like, friends' birthdays to, like, the Wikipedia timeline and stuff like that, but can't do that anymore.
Why doesn't our podcast have a Wikipedia page?
That's
why
a great question.
The hell? We're like 150-some-odd episodes in. Like, it's time to pay the piper, Wikipedia.
Someone should get on that.
I am a wiki author. I had to do some stuff with that back in college.
Well, there we go. We've got our in.
I think Kyle needs to create us one.
Yeah, if you look up the compound Magthor, all the words of wisdom there were published by yours truly.
There you go. Apparently, J.R.R. Tolkien, not a pen name.
Correct.
Wow, Jesus Christ, Daryl.
What the shit? I just assumed that all these RRs just, like, I don't know anybody else with, like, two middle names.
The Apostle Paul, not a pen name. He really was Paul.
His first name was Apostle.
I mean, he was formerly Saul and changed his name to Paul, so... And then he started
writing.
Are you
on Wikipedia, Will?
What's that?
Are you just wikiing this, Will?
No, I'm wikiing entirely unrelated things. I searched, for instance, to make certain that we did not have a Wikipedia page that I didn't know about. Looks like we do not.
Ah, damn it. How bittersweet.
It'd be cool if we did, like if someone had one all this time and we're just those assholes. I wish we had one. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
This guy in Europe, he's been slaving away.
Even away, like every episode has like in-depth show notes.
Yeah, one of us has to go back and listen to each episode and put a synopsis down.
Yeah, seriously, Will.
Probably
Every single episode.
Oh, man.
What a strong that would be.
All right. So anyways.
On podcast.
Thank you for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump. My name is Daryl.
Konnichiwa, bitches. Zero people expected that out of me.
I will agree with that.
I don't know what... Ah, damn it. Do you know what the worst part about that is?
That is, you're putting your hand in a bag of Doritos while we're recording?
No, I was getting ready to say it. One of the comments when I asked people if I should keep it or not said do it with more thought. So I'm like, maybe I'll jazz up and I was going to put marshmallows in my mouth and say it.
Oh.
Well, we'll let you do that anyway, so go ahead.
Oh, no. Will stole the show. Will stole the show.
So you're just, like, putting your bag of marshmallows away, like, damn it.
Oh, no, he's still eating the marshmallows.
Oh, yeah.
You don't waste marshmallows, Daryl.
It does sound good.
You're so good. I'm fluffy.
All right.
Well, this week we've got a treat for you guys. Maybe not the episode you're expecting, or maybe it is. We did have a new FAQ go up earlier this week, but we had already been planning on trying to hit the chapter pack review since it was spoiled on AGOT cards. So we are just kind of going to hit things in the order they came up. This week will be the chapter pack, and next week we'll talk about the FAQ. That way we're not forcing a four-hour podcast down your throats. Plus, then we don't have to record for 6 to 8 hours, knowing how we are. So, I say, let's get rolling with the prize in the north.
All right, let's do it.
All right. Daryl, since you introduced yourself first this week, you want to hit the first card?
Hell yeah. All right, so first up, we have Baratheon with Defenders of the Wall. It is a 2-cost, 3-strength with a military icon character. It has the Night's Watch as well as the Army trait. No attachments except weapon. And it reads, Defenders of the North may be declared as a defender during military challenges initiated against you by players running an agenda, even if it is already knelt. Or kneeling, I should say.
I have to ask, Daryl, I know you've been trying to make Night's Watch work the last couple of weeks. Will this help? Is this what Night's Watch needed?
This is not even close to what Night's Watch needed.
Yeah.
As much, like, come on. Come on. I think that, you know, Night's Watch already wins a lot of challenges on defense. Like, I've put together a Night's Watch deck. I mean, it's all about defense, even, you know, built around the wall. And got. I mean, this is kind of nice, I guess. If you don't want to go with, like, the wall route, now you have something that can defend those military challenges instead of needing to pop something in with the wall. But maybe they're going to make a whole slew of these guys where there will be an intrigue one and a power one. But I still don't think this is quite what the Night's Watch need to become playable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just sad. I don't want to go too far off topic, but just really quick, it's just sad how much better the Wildling agendas are. We're going to have to get those guys maybe an easier way to get renown or something, like put in another sub-theme of some kind.
I mean, if you're running the agendas, even just the second two, let's say that somehow, like, you didn't worry about it. You're still getting a 2-for-3 non-unique Tricon. I mean, it's not bad. That's not bad at all.
No, it's not.
I mean, I'm not saying it's awesome, but I don't think it's a terrible card. I think it most certainly helps. Thinking of, like, what's his name? Balon Swan out of Lannister. that still defends when he's knelt. I mean, and it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
In the ability, everything here at least is positive.
Right. I mean, it is a 2-for-3 army.
Yeah, it's still nice and efficient, but I think it's not so much a good fit for Night's Watch decks, which is, I guess, just what I've been wanting lately. I think it has its home more in other types of deck that either get better use out of that good efficiency on the cost to strength, or, dare I say it, melee. I think the ability to defend several extra incoming challenges is really nice for Baratheon, who tends to really get picked on in melee.
Yeah, and maybe you're right. I mean, they still do need to make cards for melee, so I get that. All right, I guess I'm going to go ahead and rate them. I'm going to give them a AC. I mean, they're still 2-for-3. That's decent.
I mean, you're never going to run this card, I don't think, without the agendas. And so I you go into it viewing it as a 2-for-3 tricon, a non-unique 2-for-3 tricon. And with that, but knowing that you can, it only works... I hate sounding like Aaron for a moment, but there's only certain decks you can run this card in. And I'll give it a C. I'll just give it a C. With the asterisk that I like it more than Daryl does.
I mean, it could be decent in Noble Cause.
Yeah?
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it makes the cut, but at least is another card that can get you multiple uses at the 2-cost slot. So...
Right.
There's a thought there.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's a possibility that hadn't occurred to me. I still think overall it's a pretty limited card. I agree there are some decks that are going to look at it for a specific reason or two, but it does not really have a wide application. I don't feel like it really fills holes that either Night's Watch or Bera really had exactly. Though I acknowledge Bera normally has the higher cost, lower strength characters with all the unique renowns and such. But I think overall it still only earns about a C- from me.
All right. Will, you want to read us the next one?
Sure thing. Still in Baratheon. This time we move to a location. This is Deserted Castle. It's a one-cost, non-unique stronghold, and says, any phase, kneel deserted castle to choose a Baratheon character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets +2 strength and gains the Night's Watch trait. Again, is this what Night's Watch needed? I'm not really feeling it. Just a strength pump. Granted, it has to go on a Baratheon character. I think if I want a strength pump location out of Baratheon, Smuggler's Cove is going to get me much further by giving stealth rather than, let's see, you can give him the Night's Watch trait. The only reason, for the most part, that I think that's going to matter is if you're running the agendas and you're thus giving them a specific icon. It feels kind of iffy. Even though there's a few other effects like Old Bear's Crow, I'm still not a big fan of some of that other stuff either.
I kind of like it. I mean, the strength pump can be nice. There are things that now can become increasingly better. I mean, talking about the card we just had, let's say you're running the agendas, now you can make them 2-cost, 5-strength tricons. I mean, that world seems kind of cool. I mean, if anything, it doesn't have any kind of stipulation on it. If you need... Like the pump kind of reminds me of that threat of activation. You just leave it sitting there and they have to either defend or over commit when they attack, knowing you can give the pump. So, I mean, there are thoughts there. I think it's not a terrible card. I doubt I'm running Tricon triplicate of it happily in a build, but I think it will probably see a 1-2 of in Night's Watch decks. Or something with a Night's Watch theme to it. Maybe even in other stuff. I mean, like you said, it's just a Barad character. I mean, just give it pump by 2, any phase. That's kind of neat. Especially if, like, Burn ever takes off. Like, if Burn, like, becomes a huge problem for whatever you're playing, let's say you're doing like a noble cause build and you're constantly getting wrecked by burn, throwing like two of these in to pump your dudes could be nice as a meta play. I don't know. There are some things here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think this card is plenty powerful.
I think it's a little more subtle. It's not an in-your-face. This is so obviously awesome. But I think it's a solid card.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's really decent. It might be kind of interesting to maybe run the Night's Watch, one of the Night's Watch agendas, like the Stewards, to give maybe, I don't know, Double Renowned Bob an intrigue icon, and maybe you've got a way to give him Vigilant or something. So now you're cooking a little more. Could be interesting, and a +2 strength buff is always good. So I could definitely see it. And the fact that it's non-unique is really nice. So now you get two or three of those out, and you make your dudes huge. And it doesn't have to be like during a challenge like whatchamacallit is.
The Smuggler's Cove that I mentioned.
Yes. Yeah, and it's only during a power challenge, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so you kind of have the trade-off. That one gives stealth during a power challenge, but this is kind of a +2 all the time, so really a nice defensive tool as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some other options, and of course, I think it probably works well with the new wall that we'll get into and delve more into in a moment. So there's some possibilities there, but at that point, I feel like you're just using this location and the wall and whatever Barra character you wanted to stand, you know, to do what other Barra cards could do better. It feels a little too clunky for me, and not the right application I'm looking for. So I think I'm only feeling like a D+ on the Deserted Castle.
Oh, Will is wrong here.
Yeah, I couldn't give it anything that low. I +2 strength boost just for one gold, any phase, that is really nice. The Night's Watch trait, I feel right now, is just kind of mood on it. Like, maybe there'll be something else for that, but +2 strength is just really nice to have to activate over and over again. I'm going to go ahead and give it a C as well. I think that it's good. I don't think it's, you know, game-breaking or groundbreaking either, but one for +2 strength boost is nice.
Yeah, I'm at least at a C with Daryl. You're never going to be sad to see this. There's no issue of having Night's Watch on the board. It may even see playing decks that don't have Night's Watch in them at all. I just want the pump. And like, it's all positive. You can always use it. I mean, any phase, there's no restriction here on getting an effect out of it. Even if it's not an ideal play, every round you're going to be able to pump a guy, either on offense, on defense, in an ideal world, both. That's kind of a theme I've seen, at least just out of these two last Barra cards, is that, I mean, Daryl touched on, you know, Night's Watch has always been defense. Well, both of these cards can be offensive cards. You can use that army offensively because you're still going to have it there on military defense. This pump can be used to push a challenge across offensively as well as defensively. You know, see that with the next card, too. I mean, looking at these three, I think it's bringing some versatility to what Night's Watch can be, so it's not so one-dimensional. It maybe can see some more play. So I'm going to give it, I'll give it a C+.
Okay. Well, I think you're on to our next card.
Okay. And that will be the Wall, which is going to be a unique Barra location, cost 3, traits the North. And it is prized 1 and reads, if it is winter, each of your Night's Watch characters gains a power icon and the Barra affiliation. Any phase, kneel the wall to stand all Night's Watch characters you control. There's a lot of things going on that kind of need to be broken down. For starters, at 3 costs, it's something that you might start thinking about as an HOD, but now you're cutting off access to the other Night's Watch agendas. But when you look at, like, the army that came out in this pack, you at least now have a Bicon, which is not terrible, and can be used with other things. And you can make things Night's Watch with the other location in this set. So there is some synergy there. The Winter is interesting. There is a bunch of... There is some Barrow Winter tech out there, and we've seen some Barrow Winter decks before. That makes this tough, because, again, you're not running an agenda if you go an HOD route with it. But, I mean, it is a drawback. You now have to go Winter. And lately, I just haven't seen Barrow wanting to do that, just because so many other things have been so expensive. And the last bit, which it kind of fits in what I was talking about earlier, this any phase kneel it to stand all Night's Watch characters you control gives you what I think is very clearly an offensive stance, that you're in a position where you want to go second, kind of like Tully decks have always kind of game planned. I want to go second. I will take your beating, block what I need to, and now stand up and I will strike you back. It gives you a new element to the Night's Watch game, instead of just trying to be a wall of beef. So there's a lot going on this card that you have to think about when running it, when building with it. It's something that is going to take some thought, that you can't just slot into a deck and hope it works.
Yeah. So I immediately see this, and I think a couple of things. A, being able to stand all your Night's Watch characters is absurdly awesome. The other part of it is the fact that it has to be Winter, huge hindrance. But I sort of see why. So if we're running Noble Cause, right, all of those, say, so and then we run all like the two cost Night's Watch characters, those, all those guys gain bear affiliation. So now they all have renown, if I'm not mistaken, right? So then they all have power icons, and then you can kneel to stand them all. So, I mean, you could do some fat rush with this. Now, granted, Noble Cause doesn't really have the draw to necessarily support that, but if you could get it off, I could see it being a huge problem. So I think the fact that they add the Winter in there is sort of like, hey, we have this really awesome card that could potentially do some great things, but we're going to make it a little harder on you to just make that happen, so you couldn't just, you know, turn one rock and roll with that. So it seems, I mean, standing all of your characters is really good, but you know, they do have to be Night's Watch, and right now the Night's Watch aren't necessarily good. I mean, there are some decent ones. I mean, maybe even like maybe some out of house splash action. I mean, I'm never afraid to try something like that. But as a standalone, geez, it sucks to have to pay three for your location first off. Then it has to be Winter to get that kind of added bonus. But no matter what, you will be able to stand all of your Night's Watch characters.
Yeah, you know, and it's capable of some shenanigans, too. You drop a King's Ground on there, and
oh, yeah,
essentially at that point give all of your Night's Watch vigilance, since you'll be standing the wall every time you win a challenge on offense, thanks to the King's Ground, then kneeling the wall to stand all your Night's Watch. I think if you were to try something like that, though, you really are stuck running it with the Night's Watch agendas for the icons. Even, you know, like Kyle was mentioning, this House of Dreams, I don't really dig, because I really feel like one of the biggest benefits of this wall is going to be getting multiple uses out of those characters on multiple challenges, and hence the extra icons are going to be pretty key. But still, you know, I dig it pretty well as far as a three cost location goes. This does quite a bit, and you throw in something like First Ranger as well, that also stands Night's Watch characters, and they can participate in a lot of challenges, but I think you're right that you're probably going to want to be turning your regular Baratheon guys into Night's Watch characters to take advantage of that stand more than you're really going to, you know, get a lot out of it in just the Night's Watch characters, since, you know, they mostly don't have renown. You've got, what, Corrin Halfhand and sort of Corset Jon Snow.
Yep, and that's it.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of is a surprising versatility to the card. So, I don't know. Kyle, what would you give it?
That's tough. Yeah, looking through the pack at first blush was one I really struggled with a lot. I'm going to give it... I'll just go C+. I want to bump it up to a B-, but I'm going to have to leave it at a... I mean, there's potential. I imagine that at some point in the near future, we're going to see some, at least one, if not two, like, cool decks come out with this. I think there's some neat stuff here that just when it gets figured out is going to be pretty neat to watch.
It's going to be Greg building some kind of broken combo deck using the stand effect. I just know it.
I don't know. There's all kinds of ideas that jump into my head when you first see it. Just ways to give guys traits and things like that. Maybe some sweet conquest tech. So I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and give it a B. I've said time and time again, stand is amazing. And even though it specifically hits Night's Watch, there are ways to give traits. And maybe could be a nice boon to Night's Watch. But... I mean, there's already all that bear attack that turns your dudes into Night's Watch and stuff, so... I say all that, I'm pretty sure that's just another wall, right? Or what we just saw, the castle thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, could be good, though. I'm gonna give it a B. I feel confident. What about you, Will?
Boy. It's kind of a tough one for me, but I think it's pretty reasonable for its cost and the sort of things it does. It's sure not going to fit in every deck, and the biggest theme that it supports is pretty subpar at the moment, though. So I think even with a cool stand effect like that, I hesitate to give it higher than a C. So there you have it. It may be maybe another case of me underrating locations, but we'll see.
Will, I think it's back to you.
Actually, it should be around to you. This is... card number four, so our first person should be up.
You're right. I'm not used to going first. I'm sorry. Oh, God. All right, moving on to Greyjoy. We've got Lonely Light Envoy? I don't know how you say that word. He's 2 cost, 2 strength, military power with the Bannerman trait. And he reads, if you control a Martell character, Lonely Light Envoy gains a intrigue icon. If you control a Targaryen character, Lonely Light Envoy gains immune to plot effects. Very interesting. He doesn't really have anything going for him as far as keywords go. Becoming a Tricon could be nice. Immune to plot effects is pretty freaking huge. I feel like, I mean, this just goes back with the other characters we've seen that kind of reward you for trying to do a more of a rainbow deck or maybe encourage like conquest or alliance decks or something like that. Seems okay.
Yeah, I think it doesn't seem too bad, mainly on the back of that Targaryen clause. Greyjoy does have a dual house. Greyjoy, a Targaryen card. He's not great, but he is interesting in that he gives ambush to a house that normally cannot have it because it's a house-only keyword. So there could be some interesting stuff to do there. Immune to plot effects is big, you know? I mean, Valor won't knock him off, yours or your opponent's. He won't be returned to hand by... for the first snow of winter. I mean, there's a multitude of things that are commonly played that he will just straight up ignore. And even if he's not a super impressive character on his own, he just, you know, helps give you the numbers, the advantage after those type of effects.
I mean, the Targaryen one is definitely, it's hard to ignore that. That's a cool effect. And no doubt it says plot effects. Does it say opponent's plot effects?
No, it is just plot effects.
Plot effects. So he gets around your valor, he gets around their valor. And you have to remember, these things are not Greyjoy only, so you can see them. I think you'll see them, especially out of Targ, getting pulled in. and some weird Tara Greyjoy conquest crazy thing. I still think, I love that we're getting more cards that support those agendas and allow for, I know the Envision, and when they came out, I hope that we'd see a wide variety of conquest decks be competitive, and I don't think we have yet, per se. We've only seen a couple builds really rise up and be consistent contenders, but seeing more cards like this gives you hope that more variety and more innovation is here to come. You know, but, I mean, all these guys seem kind of neat, very Shaga cards, but immune to plot effects, period, is that cannot be ignored.
Yeah, I think that's really big. It'll be interesting to see this character go. And, I mean, they've done some stuff with the Bannerman trait in the past, so could be decent. As he stands right now, I'm going to give him a C.
Yeah, he's still not impressive stat-wise, or doesn't really do much else other than just be a body on the ground, which keeps me from wanting to put him too high, even though I really like that immunity. But it is worth noting that he's a Bannerman, and the Greyjoy discard a card to do X Bannerman is, in my opinion, the best of those Bannermen. That good brother Neil's X location. So, now that they've got several Bannermen available, and if I'm not mistaken, doesn't Greyjoy have the most Bannermen available at this point now, thanks to all the good brothers and such? I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm not running the search right in front of me at the moment, but the capability to toss one card from my hand as a pseudo event to Neil all of my opponent's locations looks pretty cool. So that kind of makes me like his potential. I still haven't seen that Bannerman stuff really take off, though.
Right.
It's a tough sell, but I think I have to go with a C. Yeah. Just a flat C. There's a little I like and a little I dislike.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. Like, the C, it always feels like a crappy cop-out to give something like a C, but really, it's just hard right now to see anything excellent out of this. I mean, immune to plot effects, I will admit, is big, but with no added keywords, you got to think about how much work you're actually going to have to put into this guy to make him good. But we've seen Grand Good Brother be a tough little bastard to get rid of because you can't Valor him off the board or anything. So could this possibly give a similar effect? I don't know.
Well, and Targ loves, with like the new dragons, to give Targ an offensive Valor, mm-hmm. having the three dragons out, plus like strong Belwas.
Mm-hmm.
This is another card that if you were for whatever reason conquesting into Greyjoy, now you get some saves, creating a situation where Targ can offensively Valor and offensively use some of these resets.
Right, so you're thinking like some type of like those three new dragons aggro deck with maybe some Greyjoy support cards. Like, is that what you're thinking? That might be nice. Some Greyjoy support locations. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I don't know if they'd win a tournament, but I would bring it to like a Thursday night.
I would play that with the ambush location too. Dude, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'd be down.
All right. Is it on to me with the next one?
It is on to you, sir.
All right. We're still in Greyjoy, but now we move on to locations with the Farwind Explorer. It is an S0 card, meaning it has the shadows grasped. It's a warship and House Greyjoy only, and response, if you are the first player, bring Farwind Explorer out of shadows to cancel a triggered effect, and +2 initiative. I have to say, I really dig this. I still think initiative can kind of be overlooked. It's especially handy for Greyjoy to go on the offensive with High Claim or to shore up their draw weakness with Bay of Ice. And between this and the other warship giving the initiative boost.
I mean,
there.
The most broken card in the game, Captured Cog.
Yeah, exactly. It starts to look pretty awesome, and even though it's been restricted now, the naval escort still gives you a really strong outlet to get further use out of the explorer. There's the guy that lets you kneel warships to reduce the cost of raiders, and you know we continue to get a smattering of raiders here and there. The fact that it comes out outside of the normal Shadows window, so you know you're not limited to that one Shadows card per phase business, and it cancels any triggered effect at all, is pretty cool, I think.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but can this melt a Harrenhal? Let's say they trigger their Harrenhal, you bring it out to cancel the Harrenhal, they kill another dude to cancel it, it goes back into Shadows, because they're canceling it, right?
I think so. That
just
they
bring
cancel
Negra out,
it being
cancel
brought
Negra.
Out of Shadows.
Yep, but I guess the food for thought there is if you're running Harrenhal, then don't waste it trying to cancel this.
You can melt out. You can melt out the Harrenhal because they'll pop it back, and then you can just keep doing it again and again and again. And having a surprise cancel is nice. Is really really nice. I mean, there's a lot to like here. A lot to like here.
Yeah, I would say though, it's only really a semi surprise. Because Greyjoy really doesn't have much in the way of Shadows stuff that they're running.
I mean, right now, yeah, sadly. But, I mean, there was a world where it could be a Preston or a Serio. I mean, it could still be a Serio.
Mm-hmm. It could maybe be a Varus that they're playing for value. There's still some options, but it's not as iffy as, say, if this were a Lannister card.
True. But the nice thing now for Greyjoy players is that anything you do put in Shadows, your opponents are going to worry if it is this Farwind Explorer.
Right.
Well, that's, I think seeing more Shadows come out of Greyjoy is just a great idea to begin with, because I don't know about you, but I'm sick of seeing Boatswains in every Greyjoy deck, so we could use it. I say
it's
we.
It's also nice, because this, like Mira for City of Shadows, does get around the extra gold. So City of Shadows will be bringing this out for free.
Which, you gotta love that. Props.
That's
kind of
Shadows. We've not seen a lot of City of Shadows lately.
We really haven't.
Nope. Probably my favorite agenda, but it's just not there anymore. Yeah. Alright, if you had to rate it, what would you give it?
I actually dig it pretty well. I think I would be willing to rate it like a solid B.
Definitely a B+. It's way better than Will thinks it is.
I don't know if I would give it a B. I don't know. Tough. I like that it has the stipulation of being first player. I think that keeps it balanced. Also gives you a reason to run ahead of the tide, right? When was the last time you saw that business? Still warship, still works with all that. I'll probably agree. I'll probably give it a B. Like, canceling just any triggered effect could be pretty damn fat.
I mean, we see it all the time with Harrenhal now.
Right.
Only now I don't have to kill a dude. Plus, this almost makes you want to run Bay of Ice as a draw engine.
Yeah. Which, like I said, Greyjoy can really use.
I mean, we did get a question about that. Some guy asked during our very failed Twitter Q&A session, which did not go well at all. But our lone question did involve Greyjoy, Dark Wings, Dark Words. And I talked about it there, like Greyjoy's hungry for a draw engine. And Bay of Ice was, you know, it was the bee's knees when it came out. So, at least in my opinion. So, it'd be worth the look at. There are enough things now, like Captured Cog and the King's Roads, that initiative can be manipulated in a pretty efficient way, and we're seeing more and more that having control of a first player can really go a lot to determine a game.
All right. Let's keep her moving.
Yep. Kyle, you're up.
I am. We have another warship, a Longship Iron Wind, cost 2, and this warship is prized 1 and reads challenges, Neo Longship Iron Wind to put a character with printed cost 2 or lower into play from your hand.
Mm.
May seem very familiar to listeners, because, you know, we spoiled it.
We did.
We did. I just played a game against this right before we recorded, actually, as an HOD. And I kind of expected, I don't know, to be kind of gimmicky and not very efficient and more of a fun card. But, I mean, he had some out-of-house stuff in there, like some of the specialized guys and whatnot. But, I mean, it really goes a long way for pumping up a board presence. It reminded me kind of that Gates of Winterfell deck, but like a lighter version of it. Between it and Great Wick, I mean, he was just throwing dudes out there. Played Blockade, so I'm getting nothing, and he's dropping in essentially 4 gold worth of stuff for free just off that those two locations. It's a really solid play. Even if you aren't trying to do cute things to get around the out-of-house penalty, just being able to pump in guys is a really awesome resource.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed really neat to me, and the more I think about it, the more I keep wanting to experiment with it in a Shaga sense, be it a House of Dreams or something else, and just try to cherry-pick all the good stuff. But the ability to have that pseudo-ambush in Greyjoy, I think, is really pretty awesome for them. It's really outside their normal bailiwick, if you will. And, I don't know, I think that has the potential to really mess with people.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be pretty fun. I mean, I don't know as far as how great it's going to be in tournament decks, but this card is going to be incredibly fun in a number of different decks, and I'm pretty excited to use it myself. So, I mean, Ambush is awesome. Like, we've already seen how awesome that is, so getting to do it out of a house that doesn't normally get it will be cool. I mean, even running this card out of house may prove to be kind of fun. Who knows?
It, I think it compares really favorably to a Street of Silk, even as a straight Greyjoy build. I think you'll see, it might see some play there even. I like it. I see a lot of uses, a wide variety of uses. Well, I guess it's one use, it throws a dude in, but
right.
cool ways you can do it. Like you said, you talk about Ambush Light.
Surprise Windermere save or something, like a surprise save of some kind might be cool.
All kinds of stuff. It's really neat. Like you said, it's any character, so if you're doing Conquest to Greyjoy, this is definitely worth a look. Like, there's a lot of neat things here, for sure.
All right. So what are you going to give that card?
I will give it 2 costs is really nice. And the prize on locations doesn't really scare me a ton, especially with, I think, the old way falling in popularity because with the latest FAQ. I think it's a B plus card.
I hate to just agree with Kyle on that, but yeah, the cost is not prohibitive. Prized 1 doesn't worry me much either, let alone on a location. And the possible versatility and big surprise factor that it brings to Greyjoy, I think, really opens up some new avenues. So it looks really solid. I'm willing to give it a B+ as well.
Yeah, I hate to just sit there and agree across the board. I will say that if this card was neutral, I would give it an A. I think that effect,
oh, yeah,
if it had that kind of versatility, would be absolutely fantastic. And I don't think necessarily on a just a destructive level, like a positive destructive level, I should say, with Mira, like how powerful she is, and you know, she's the A card that we compare everything to. But on a different level, as far as just mixing and matching and just doing these crazy things, even you know, putting neutral characters in. But I will give it a B just because it is out of Greyjoy. And, just a little restriction on that.
All right, I think we're on to the next card then.
All right, back around to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now we're switching gears to Lannister. And our first card up is Ashmark Counselor, or Chancellor, however you want to say that. He is 2 cost, 2 strength, with an intrigue icon, with the House Marbrand trait. It is prized 1. And he says, while Ashmark Counselor is participating in a challenge, characters with more than one icon do not count their strength. So, we've seen these guys before. Halfway decent can be okay.
Yeah, yeah, I think he'll be all right. The Martell one definitely sees some play, though it's easier to give her extra icons and let her block all sorts of challenges. But Lannister does have power behind the throne, and I think he lets you win those with a whole lot less committed to that particular challenge, which frees up your characters to participate some in other challenges, which, you know, I think is all around good for them.
Yeah. Basically, if this card's your problem, you should probably start to play, what's that, Craster. Play Craster.
Yeah, I mean, Craster is still one I have a hard time cutting from some decks because he's just so efficient and
2 for 5.
You know, I'm not going to be putting him into a challenge that he's not winning. So, yeah.
Of all the monocons, I think the intrigue ones are my favorite. So I like these guys a lot. I mean, I love Lannister, and these guys are nice. The 2 slot has felt like it's got some room to play lately. So, yeah, let's rock and shock.
Yep.
What kind of rating would you give it then, Daryl?
I'm just going to give them what I'm going to give the other ones, and that is a C. I think that can definitely have some utility, but, you know, it's just okay in the end. It'll end up getting cut more often than not, I think.
I think Daryl's wrong. I'm going to give it a B, because Daryl's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty decent ability. I think it does feel a little lower on power level than the Martell one, like I said, because it's a little harder to give those icons out in Lannister, so that you can really muck up a bunch of challenges. So, yeah. He'll be in some decks and cut from others. I feel about like Daryl on it. Let's give him a C.
Better start running Maester Miles, Martell players.
There you go. Okay, I think, is it back to me already? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, now this is a sweet one. Still in Lannister with Marbrand Outrider. He's a 3 cost, non-unique. He has 2 strength. A military and an intrigue icon. He's House Marbrand and an ally. He is prized 2 and responds after 1 or more cards are discarded from an opponent's hand. Reveal the top card of your deck and add it to your hand. It's pretty sweet. I will admit he does have a few knocks against him. He has a lower strength than cost, and at that 2 cost mark, which can be hit by Venomous Blade, which I'm seeing a bit more of, or hearing more people talk about now. He is also an ally, so that makes the prize 2 scary, in that I think that'll be triggered fairly often off him. But on the other hand, if you get a couple cards out of the deal beforehand, you're probably still up as long as it's still in the early to mid game. And I think it'll be pretty easy to get 2 or 3 cards out of him before he bites the dust.
I feel like this card here is a little unnecessary. Now, I don't know what's going to happen as far as like rotation goes or whatever, but Stark is a house that has plenty of draw in-house. Now, I guess if you wanted to take a draw lighter version and wanted to, you know, spit out more dudes, then that's the way you would go. But I just don't see it right now. I mean, the effect is definitely good. Maybe even better in melee.
Oh, yeah. Definitely even better in melee. Because you don't have to be involved in that discard at all. So, essentially, anytime an intrigue challenge is won against anyone that's not you, you get to put the top card of your deck into your hand. I mean, and there's a lot of other ways to do that, aside from intrigue challenges. You know, Ghost of Iheart equates to a card every turn. Confession is going to discard from their hand and give you a card. There's various little ways to get into that, or maybe fiddle around with some of the Baratheon discard stuff if you want to try a more control-oriented conquest deck.
Without his beard.
Yep, even without his beard. And it does get around the draw cap, and Lanny normally has so much draw they don't have too big of a problem staying on top of that. But once you can add in effects that get around that as well, and especially with, you know, rivers are going to be seen less now, now that this latest FAQ's out and they're restricted. You know, Lanny's got a lot of other good restricted options. They're not going to be picking the rivers very often, I don't think. And the Outrider helps kind of give some of that non-draw card advantage back.
I mean, we just talked about how people were dedicating 5 plots plus other cards for acceleration to them 11 cards. I mean, right? That's what it nets.
Yeah.
So now we have one card that, let's say we're running Power Behind the Throne, can potentially net you 2 cards a turn just off a claim. That's not including all the other cute ways you can do things. Without his beard, like there's another guy now that does that. Isn't there another maester we have now that'll discard cards and let them draw back up?
It's a Pylos. Or Pycelle, rather, yeah.
There's a Pycelle. Threat from the East. I mean, I wouldn't dedicate a lot of cards to it. But there are other good effects you can run to trigger him. I mean, if he's alive 2 turns, and you can do them twice, even, that's 4 cards. That's half of what you were dedicating your plot deck to off of one character. I mean, if you look at the math, I've heard a lot of people talk smack about this guy. He's not very good. But if card advantage really is king and will sell out for it, I don't see any reason why he's not worth a good look.
Yeah. All right, well, let's rate him.
Okay. I guess I'm up first since I read him. Mm-hmm. It's kind of tough for me. I really, really like that ability, but I do have to acknowledge the fact that allies are more dangerous now than they used to be for quite a while. Now that the refugees are off the restricted list, Dissension is seeing a bunch more play. But I still think you'll get several cards out of him most of the time. So I think I probably still feel a solid B to B plus out of him.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and give him a C. I think that, reveal is king in Game of Thrones right now, obviously, to get around that draw cap. But it being a prize to ally that's 3 for 2, I smell a trap. I think that I'm seeing a lot more Dissension, too. I don't know if that's just our area or what, but I just could not do it right now.
I will give him... I want to give him something that starts with a B, but I'll give him a B minus. And then maybe on the generous side. He's a dangerous risk-reward card, but people don't care about that as much these days. Harrenhal sees a tons of play, and I think it's a boom or bust card, but I think he will, if used properly, can be a very effective tool in your deck. So I will bump him up. I'll give him the B minus.
All right. I think you're up with the next one.
I get to read a card?
Yeah.
Get to read a card.
Wow. I believe we're moving on to Martell.
Bingo.
With the House Dane Escort, looks like a 2 for 2 non-unique military entry. He has the Bannerman and House Dane trait, surprise, and like some of the other dual house ones, he says if you control a Greyjoy character, he gains deadly, and if we control a target character, he gains immune to plot effects. noticing a bit of a theme.
Yeah, definitely a theme there.
But both very, very good abilities. I'm real high on Deadly right now. And, well, I mean, I say right now like I'm not usually, but, I mean, it's a really strong keyword, especially with all these prize characters floating around. And, I mean, once again, we already had this conversation, but Munipod effects cannot be ignored. So, I mean, very, very strong. I don't know from a competitive cutthroat standpoint how great he's going to end up being. But, I mean, they're at least committing legitimate cards to these conquest decks from not necessarily obvious marriages. They're giving them fuel to work with. I mean, this is a legitimate card that you don't just go, oh, this is crap. They just made it for the sake of making it. I feel like it at least is good enough to warrant consideration in those builds. I mean, if I was doing conquest to or from Martell with either of those houses, I would look to throw him in for sure.
All right, give him a rating.
I'll just give him a C.
Yeah, I'm on that same boat. A C. Immune to plot effects could be awesome. It will make for a fun build, but just nothing crazy, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with a card like this.
Yeah, he's basically just the same sort of thing as the other. Bannerman we just talked about, with the addition of maybe some House Dane perks. I don't know, that never really seemed to go anywhere. But I just keep looking at that immune to plot effects, and that looks so, so tasty. Kind of makes me want to try something with a light, you know, three-color theme to try to activate you know, the both of those Bannermen with some Targ cards and just never lose anything to some plot effects. So I kind of dig it, but it's not amazing. It's definitely triggering that Shaga switch for me. So it's probably just a C card.
All right. Next up, we've got Seneschal Ricasso. He is a unique Martell character. He is 2 cost, 2 strength, intrigue power. He is an ally with a Learned Crest who reads response after Seneschal Ricasso. Dang it, said it right the first time. Seneschal Ricasso leaves play. Choose a prized character in your dead or discard pile and put it into play under your control. Seems fun. Definitely seems fun. Could be valuable somewhere. I'm not sure which. I mean, I guess if you want to bring back any of your just powerful prize guys, I was just trying to think of a prize card that like came into play that had a sweet effect.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Like in Martell, you're either putting the little monocon intrigue girl into play or going out of house for something like maybe Caitlin. I don't know. That, you know, the prized cards that we've gotten haven't really been prized characters for the most part. There's a lot of locations or just really dinky characters that really aren't worth worrying about with Ricasso. Or
so there's that Dany and Tyrion.
Well,
yeah. That was my first thought.
That's probably a good point. But that's what I'm saying. You're going to have to go out of house for it. In Martell, their cards are Dinky or You Murder the Children.
I said, we don't call it out of house anymore, Will. We call it Conquest.
Gotcha. Or go ahead and use Desperate Measures as your restricted card or some of the other Martell discard stuff and chuck a bunch of your deck and then try to cheat them into play.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking, you know, try to cheat these powerful characters into play, maybe some out-of-house ones, and, I don't know, open up with First Snow or something, have some action going on where you can return to your hand, or maybe this is where we'll see Patience.
Patience, yeah.
Yeah,
there's definitely some possibilities to bounce him repeatedly. Yeah.
I mean, you gotta kind of hand it to FFG. I feel with this cycle in particular, we're not all the synergies are just handed to us on a silver platter. They definitely want us to think up some fun ways to use a lot of these cards. So I like him.
Creativity is at an all-time high, for sure.
Yeah. I definitely like him. I'm going to give him a B. I think that this could be really strong in a deck that maybe has a one of those prized characters as their linchpin or something like that. And the fact that he just has to leave play leads you to maybe use some other tricks. Maybe you cold hands him out to bring somebody in or something like that. Or, just there's a number of ways right now. So I think that could be pretty fun. Dare I say it, we even see Pinch of Powder see play.
Don't say that.
No. No. I hope so. I want it to be a thing.
It's not. And it
good luck is all I can say.
If it gets reprinted in an actual form worth using, then yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Maybe we're talking to you, FFG.
Yeah. I mean, you cannot ignore the Learned Crest on it either.
Right.
Yeah, Martell's actually got more than a few of those now, so.
Yeah, there's some books floating around.
Little Schemes of the Scholars action. Could be fun. What would you give it as far as ratings go, Kyle?
At least a B+. I like him a lot.
All right. What about you, Will?
I think he's fairly cool. Might open up some potential, but again, has to be a pretty specific deck type, even if it's a deck type that I like. So I'm looking at it at like a C+.
Specific deck type, just run a couple prize dudes. I mean, worst case scenario, you're in a position where you have to kill him for claim or for a valor or something, and you get to bring another dude back. It's just card advantage, straight up.
Yeah, I feel like this card could have some nasty synergy.
If you're bringing back something worthwhile, that's the catch. The worthwhile prize stuff are those big beefy ones you mentioned, like Danny and Tyrion, and you know, so you got to dedicate some resources to that kind of gameplay.
Yeah, not necessarily.
Hey, we can go back and forth about it all day.
I just like being able to get a dude after I lose this dude. So I keep my same number of dudes. That seems good.
I think he's good. Who's up next? I think it's Will.
Is it me? Did you just read the Seneschal? I guess you did.
Yep, I did.
All right. We're still in Martell, this time with a unique. It's Elia Sand. She's 2 cost, 2 strength, a military and an intrigue icon. Sand Snake and Bastard. Prized 1 and challenges. Choose an opponent who controls more characters than you. You may declare an additional intrigue challenge against that opponent this phase. Limit once per phase. I mean, I think this is awesome. As long as you are down on character count, which Martell, you know, can manage fairly well, they're kind of used to doing it for things like the Red Viper or lately the hot button Bloodthirst. She turns into a walking power behind the throne. And I think that's pretty freaking sweet.
The extra challenge is never a bad thing.
Yeah, I think adding another Sand Snake too is pretty rad. She seems pretty good to me, and I think that she can definitely help create the post-monster Bloodthirst and go with the more, I like to say the more traditional Bloodthirst. I feel like the way as intended Bloodthirst, which I played around with a bit and had decent results. So, yeah, I mean, she could be really good, especially with Princess of the Sun Red Viper rolling around. Another challenge to use that bastard in? Like, come on.
Yeah, if you can keep her on the board with that Viper and still have the lower character count, that's awesome. Having the extra challenge he's not kneeling in.
Oof. Yeah, could be really good. All right, Will, what are you giving her?
I like her an awful lot. Prize 1 doesn't worry me too bad. She's actually a fairly worthwhile prize card for Martell. Finally, thankfully. Maybe I'll like Ricasso a little better. And I think it's a really strong ability. What's that?
Said you beat me to it. I was going to throw it in your face. Yep. So we had a
worthwhile prize character.
And so I like her quite a bit. I think she's a very solid B.
Man, so many damn B's rolling around, but it's, I mean, that's what's going on. This is, it's a very decent pack right now. And yeah, absolutely a B. An additional challenge, like, come on. That's always good.
I don't know why. She scares me a little bit. Like, I just get, like, this nagging feeling she's a bit of a trap. And I have no anything to base that off of outside of just a gut intuition. I'll drop her down to a C+. That's because I worry that without Bloodthirst being restricted, that having a lower character count's just easier said than done at the moment. But hey, the meta may shake out, and there may be viable low character count builds. It's not a problem at all.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Otherwise, I mean, you could still put her in a Sand Snake deck, and I mean, it's another Sand Snake that's going to be balls to the wall. So
yeah, so when they all don't kneel to attack, you can, yeah, just
well,
punch in their face just a little bit more.
You may have more characters on the board than them at that point, though.
If you want maybe to.
It is your choice.
Yeah.
I don't know, it could be fun. She could be fun. All right, next up is Kyle, right?
Yep.
All right. Interstark.
With, I believe, the last of the specialized guys. I believe we've seen them all at this point.
I think you're
this
right.
Riverlands Hunter. He is a 2-for-2 military icon. The House Tully trait, so that's positive.
Yeah.
Prized 1. When Riverlands Hunter is participating in a challenge, characters with more than one icon do not count their strength. Now, I do love these specialized guys, and I've talked about weird tricks with making them tricons, and Tully does love defense, and that's a weird way it can go. But I do not like this one as much as the other ones. Just the military is so hard. There are some prevalent military monocons out there, the big one being the Carrion Birds. So that does hurt it a little bit. But, I mean, I still like these guys. I still think they are all at least B-level cards. And finally getting Starks, just, you know, it helps. I think they're solid at least 2 drops in most decks.
Yeah, I dig him. I've got to say, because of that Tully trait, I think my good old Stonewall Martell deck actually got a couple nice pieces this particular set in the Riverlands Hunter and the, what is she, the Dane Envoy, is that her name? Regardless, the Martell and the Stark Monocons are really nice for that kind of build. Run a little bit of icon Grandine stuff, and I have multiple ways to just kill challenges dead without having to go back to Burning on the Sands now that it's restricted, or to go ahead and use along with Burning, and then hopefully just claim mountains of power with River Run.
Yeah. I mean, he's really solid to help. He's definitely going to help Stark push across a lot of those their murder events too, which is nice, because unlike the murder events or like the other triggered events that are better out of, like, that are good out of the other houses, and I'm just thinking automatically like Seductive Promise out of Bear. I know it's not just a Bear card, but that's normally where I'll play it, because you're going to win a lot of power challenges, but you have to win it by 4. But with the Stark ones, you don't, you know, you just have to win it. And I think he's going to help a lot. He might see the most play, I feel, out of those monocons, but I don't know.
Really? Man, yeah. I feel like he won't see that much play because Stark just wins military challenges with almost without even trying.
That's true. I'm just thinking maybe a less traditional Stark build, I feel, could happen.
Oddly, I think he might be worth throwing into Siege to give you an extra option if you don't happen to have Sirio. Because, you know, let's be honest, it happens sometimes. But you've still got some epic battles, and you want to be able to win as many military challenges as you can with as fewer resources as necessary.
Hell yeah. This is a 3X in Siege for sure. Hell yeah.
Yeah. What kind of rating does that earn him, though?
I'm still going to... Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I didn't read the card. I apologize. Go ahead, Kyle.
I give him the B. I think there are some cons with the military icon, but again, there are still some pros and a lot of uses. And the Tully plus Siege, like, Stark is so versatile on how it can be built right now, and it's good on both ends of the spectrum. And even in some of my more tempo stuff, I'm running some. So that alone tells me it warrants at least a B.
What do you think, Will?
It's kind of tough for me because partly I want to put him in what is, frankly, kind of a gimmicky deck. But I do think he has a home in at least one in particular really strong deck right now, the very legit Siege. It's just all that middle ground of other Stark decks that I'm not really sold on for him, which makes the rating kind of difficult. I think it probably washes out so that he's still a little bit higher than some of the others. So I'm going to put him at C+, maybe a B- on the outside.
Yeah, I really like him. Like I said, I feel like he could be one of the most played ones. I think you could look at Stark a little differently and maybe do some other little shenanigans they have. Maybe do like a less character build and try to use their new locations. I don't know. But I'm still going to give him a C. I feel like these cards, like they're decent and they'll have their time, but I still don't feel like it's like utterly powerful. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, there's not a lot of monocon military guys running around that see play. So, more often than not, you're probably just going to win that challenge, at least with the current meta.
All right, I think that sends it back around to you, doesn't it?
It does. It does, it does, it does. Next up, we've got Hand of the King. It is a Stark attachment, and it is unique. It is cost 1. It has the title trait. It is prized 1, and it says, Lord or Lady character only. Any phase, kneel Hand of the King to stand attached character. I'm very impressed with this card. This seems really, really good. Multiple uses out of Breen of Tarth is awesome. Is the Blackfish a lord? I can't remember. I know he's a knight.
I think he's a lord and a knight. Is he a lord? If I recall.
Oh, okay. So that could be really nice with a little more renown action going on. I don't know. Really nice just to kneel at any phase and stand that character. So, and you don't have to win a challenge or anything like that. It just happens. This could be one of the Stark attachments that really brings back playing attachments in Stark.
I mean, I think one huge thing is that it gets kind of sick with Bran Stark. If they don't have an answer to him pretty quick, he zips you right through your plots.
Yeah. That'd be really good.
But he sees this card. I like that it's not a Stark Lord or Lady. That's just any Lord or Lady, so it's got conquest potential.
Or just, you know, Targ potential with that location of theirs.
Slaver's Bay?
Port at Slaver's Bay. Yeah, there we go. Slaver's Bay. And they definitely have some stuff they might want to put it on, like, oh, I don't know, Daenerys Targaryen.
Oh, yeah.
I believe Viz is a king.
Yeah.
That's my hate one. But even in Stark, there are some quality lords, all the Robs, Jane, if you want to just like search out for all your kings and all your Riders of the Red Fork.
That's right.
There are a lot of really cool. I've been playing with 1X in some Stark decks lately, just seeing if it's worth it. And I mean, just even on stuff that doesn't really use it, like Edmure, just playing on Edmure, having this deadly guy going twice is super nice. There are a lot of solid choices to use, even in Stark alone. So I, as an attachment, I really, really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really dig it. Man. I'm tempted. I'm tempted. I want to give it an A so bad, but it's so hard to give an attachment that kind of a rating that doesn't necessarily do anything. It's really going to matter who you put it on. That's the important part, and the fact that it needs that synergy, I have to give it a B.
Yeah, you know, I already kind of dug Heartsbane, which does some similar stuff, but requires you to actually be in a challenge that you've won. Of course, it can go on anybody, not just a warrior lady. So there's some trade-offs, but I definitely don't think that Hand of the King is any worse than that. So I think I'm willing to give it a B. This is pretty solid, especially for an attachment.
I don't... Daryl likes it more than I do. So I'll give
That's
it a
new.
B. That is new.
Well, it's back around to you, sir.
Yeah, I get to move us on to a new house for the first time. Now we get to go to Targaryen, and we have an attachment here. It's unique. It's the Black Dragon Egg. Zero cost item, prized one, and limit one per deck. Attached character gains deadly and responds after Black Dragon Egg leaves play. Search your deck for a copy of Drogon or Black Hatchling. Reveal it and add it to your hand, then shuffle your deck. I just want to throw out there, if this had setup, I would be, like, all on board with it. This is just the sort of small effect that's going to be kind of fickle since it's once per deck, or one per deck, that I wouldn't mind including and helping out my setup a little bit if I could do it. As is, not set up, and not having any real certainty of getting it, unless I'm devoting some of my deck to searching for this attachment so that it can then search for a dragon, that feels pretty clunky.
Mm. Well, I'm assuming it's limit one per deck just for thematic reasons.
Probably so.
Which... Hey, I respect that. Respect that. It's the leave play, so it's going to be, you know, prized one. Search. I mean, if you want to look for one of your dragons, why don't you just play Dancing with Dragons? I mean, I get that it gives a character, like, I don't know, an extra boon. Like, it's just kind of there for me. I mean, I get it, though.
This one is probably my favorite of the three, just because Deadly's really strong. And most people in Targ decks are at least running the old school Black Hatchling that can't defend. So even in decks without necessarily dragons, you are getting Deadly, which is always solid. And there is a viable target that you're probably running anyways. So of the three, if any of them are going to see casual play in something that's not a dragon dedicated deck, where you're probably just looking for dupes for whichever one you're missing. I think the one that we'll see play is this one. But even still, that prized one, these make me nervous.
Yeah, I would have actually, I would have preferred these cards to either be like a Shadows card, you know, like you're smuggling the dragon egg or something, or also have like Ambush, so then you could like surprise Deadly or surprise Stealth, or, you know, for the other ones. Like, I think that would be really awesome with them rather than their current form.
Yeah. So what kind of rating should this have in the end? Gosh. The limit and the lack of setup just really kills me on this search effect for some reason. And that pulls it down. I think this egg's probably the eggs in general, though I agree with Kyle, this one looks a little better than the others. Probably puts it in like the D range. D plus, perhaps.
Yeah. Search is decent. But I just feel like we could have made this card better. I'm going to give it a D. I just don't think the Targaryen's really going to want to do that. I mean, you know, we've talked about the three dragon thing being super fun and stuff, but maybe in that deck.
I will give it a D plus, just because I think I'm giving the other ones lower ratings than that. And if you were running dragons, it's not like dedicated dragons either set. I could see it maybe, just because it's another way to efficiently go get dupes that give you a perk in the meantime. I don't know. I'll give it a D plus.
You know, I do want to throw out one last thought here, though it applies to all the dragon eggs. I do really like that finally, like, this is one of the cards that I just really feel from a Nedley standpoint, 100%, these should be prized, you know?
Oh, yeah. I know you had a big deal about that. You're like, what? Why are we prizing this, like, guy who rows a boat?
Yeah.
Prizing exactly. The dragon eggs makes sense. I just feel like there just could have been more. Oh well, maybe that means we'll get more dragon eggs in the future. Did you rate it, Will?
Yes, sir. I gave it a D, possibly.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And I did as well. All right, Kyle, you're up next, man.
This one is the green dragon egg. And is just like its darker cousin. This one grants melee, and when it leaves play, lets you go look for the green hatchling or Rhaegal. And I'll be honest, I do not like this one anywhere near as much as I did the first one. But maybe if you're running Dragon Rush, I don't know who does that, but people do, I hear. You do need the green one to make it all work. So any card that helps me go get him is a boon. So in that build, this card will probably see a one-off. But outside of that, it's a struggle to see play. I struggle to see it.
I mean, it has to only see play as a one-off. Part of the card text.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, my thoughts on the green dragon egg, honestly, are almost exactly the same as my thoughts on the black. So I don't really feel there's too much new to say there, though. As underrated as I think the melee keyword is, Nedley is still better.
Man, I love me some melee, but same thing. I see the same thing with these cards, man. I just can't get over the fact that they just it just could have been better. Whatever. I'm going to give it a D.
Okay.
Anybody, all right. Back around to me.
Yes, sir.
The white dragon egg. Attached character gains stealth. Surprise one. Response after attached character leaves play. I read that wrong. After white dragon egg leaves play. Search your deck for a copy of Viserion or the White Hatchling, reveal it, and add it to your hand. Then shuffle your deck. Wait, didn't the other one say attached character leaves play? No, maybe not. Okay. Anywho, searches for Viserion or the White Hatchling. I do love me some Viserion, but regardless, same thing. It's just not really worth it. Gets a D.
Yeah, I really think... almost exactly the same thing. And so, yeah, there's just really not much else to say there. I like the stealth keyword. I just don't know that this attachment really does quite enough for me.
Kyle, all right.
Any thoughts on that one? Or just no, same old, same old?
Yeah, they keep being a disappointment.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not bad. I mean, there's probably some cool things you can do from like a Shaga sense with them. But, I mean, you'll probably run them in dedicated dragon decks. But that's about it right now.
Yep. So, D again, everybody?
Yeah. Cut it. I was just going to talk about making the cards better again.
Yeah.
Moving on to neutral?
Actually, I think that was me. Didn't you just read the White Dragon Egg, Darryl?
Oh, yeah, I did. Were you after me?
Yes,
sir. I thought
sir.
Kyle was. I thought you were like, oh, damn it. Okay, go ahead.
But yes, we do get to move on to neutral. Now we're to an event in the hands of the Kohoric. It is neutral faction only and prized one. Plot. Choose an opponent. That player must choose his or her next plot card this phase at random. It's kind of awesome and weird to see plot there in bold. Not something that happens often at all. But it's a interesting card. I'm not sure it's great. I mean, the tough part is it is a gamble. Your opponent is, you know, has an X percent chance to not get the, you know, the most optimal plot that phase, or, well, for that round, anyway. But you don't really have any guarantee that whatever plot they get doesn't still mess with you or doesn't still do good enough for them. I mean, you know, if it's one of their seven plots, it's probably not going to be just downright worthless to be revealed at that time. Though, you know, you might turn up a Valor when nobody wants to see it or something like that. It's very interesting, but I'm not sure it's terribly playable.
It's super playable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think this is sole reason enough for me to run. Actually, this is just throwing anybody off their plot game. I don't know how efficient or whatever that it is, but man, that could really, really screw them up.
I mean, think about it. Let's say they're running a restricted plot choice. Can you imagine having them blow their search and detain first turn, their negotiations first turn, they're crossing the mummers first turn?
Yeah, but if you're doing it first turn, it, like, your best case scenarioing it right there, like, it's a 1 in 7 chance that you force them to blow something that's, you know, straight up not good for them to do at that point. And, you know, in a lot of those plot decks, yeah, maybe there's one plot that'll just actively be bad, and then six that are pretty okay to good.
Yeah, but you can muck up key moments. Like, let's say you're ahead and they need the Valor, and now they have a 1 in 5 chance of having it.
That is probably the best use of this card, specifically an anti-Valor card, to lower your odds of facing it on that turn.
I don't know. I'm down with it. Maybe not from a competitive standpoint, but I don't know, maybe not. What I do know is that I will be making a neutral deck for sure now.
I mean, that is the other thing. You can only play it in the neutral faction, which is definitely getting some love this set. I'm not sold that it'll be enough to make the neutral faction a common choice.
I think there's a lot of time that this can see use. That plot selection and in the order you drop them is super important, and mucking with that can really do a lot. Especially early game can help shape things in your favor. I mean, Greg talks often, I mean, everyone talks often about how plots are the most powerful cards in this game, and properly picking and using them can often decide an entire match, like, regardless of what else goes on with your deck. And it's one of the few things you have control over when they see the field. And taking that away, I think, is a extremely powerful effect. I mean, so it's like plot acceleration or plot deceleration. It's yeah. Now plot randomization. It will, this card may be one of the more impactful, if not the most impactful one to come out of this pack.
I mean, I'm definitely not going to say most impactful because it's neutral faction only. And I am going to point out we've had at least one event that forced people to reveal at random already. The
Or the Five Kings?
No play. Yeah.
Wasn't that it? Yeah.
Like win a challenge and they, I don't know.
Yeah, but it could be played in any deck, if I remember right. Whereas this can only be played in neutral faction, which, I expect to see some of, up from none of, before this cycle, but it's not going, I just really don't think it's going to become something where I go into Gen Con expecting to play against neutral faction decks. I think it will still be an outlier.
I guess impactful is the wrong word. I think when people play it, it will shape games. Of the cards in this pack, you're looking for a card that can turn the table for you. I think this can do it. It can bail you out. It can solidify the win. It is a closer and a saver all in one.
Well, as far as ratings go, I'm not too sold on it. I feel so ambivalent towards what place it will really wind up having in the meta at large. That I really don't feel I can give it higher than about a C-.
Hmm. I mean, you're not wrong where you're coming from. It can only be used in neutral faction. Neutral faction is not really good right now. They're getting some love. Will they ever be like a top tier deck? I don't think so, but I think it'll always be fun. And I think that this could definitely screw somebody's ass up. I will give it a C as well, only because it is neutral faction only. But as a standalone card, it's a B, but just like, you're not going to take neutral faction to the top. I say that now, but I hope somebody does it. That would be awesome. I will put you on this show if you win a major tournament with the neutral faction house card.
Give it a year.
Indeed.
You heard it here.
I would say give it a Bruno.
Get some Bruno. Yeah.
I do think it's coming with some stuff we're getting. I think it's
We lost you, Kyle. Hang on. Try again.
I was like, I do think it's coming with some of the support we've gotten and some of this neutral faction-only stuff. I think it's coming for sure, and I will give this a B+, and we will look back, and I will be right.
Okay.
Cool.
We shall see.
I feel like I very rarely, like, I hate saying things with a lot of conviction, per se, because it is just opinion, but I feel really good about this card.
Good. That makes me happy. I enjoy neutral faction, so cool.
Well, you know, I think, Kyle, the next card you've got is way more likely to be impactful. Why don't you lay that on us?
The next one is an event for everyone to play with. A Royal Decree. It has the Decree trait for all that Decree synergy. And it is prized 2, response, cancel the effects of an event card just played. And the important part is non-prized event cards cannot cancel this effect.
Mm.
I think it's pretty good. There's a lot of times where the paper shield just isn't cutting it anymore, with a lot of token influence costs, events that are running around, you murdered children, some big effects like that, and you want to be able to take care of them, and you may not have the gold around for the hand's judgments, so this is a nice effect, especially because a lot of those big wow impactful event cards come from control decks, burn, things like that. And so being able to take care of them, the prize 2 doesn't hurt anywhere near as bad because they're not real rushy. I think this will see some solid play. I know I'm sticking one in a couple of decks lately just to try it out, see how good it is. And I'm pretty happy with it. I think it's going to be a big replacement for Hand's Judgments.
Yeah, I mean, because there's definitely times where you don't have any gold for Hand's Judgments, like after the taxation phase and before the marshalling phase. I like this card a lot. I'm really not much more I can say about it. We know what it does. Prize 2 seems like the right cost for it. I don't think it deserves anything less than Prize 2. It's good. And it can be canceled by another royal decree. So wouldn't that be fun?
And, of course, Harrenhal.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which I think is going to be the much more common thing. Boy, it's tough here. And so far, I haven't seen Harrenhal just everywhere in quite the way Aaron expected, but I have definitely seen a good amount of it in the couple regionals I went to a few weeks ago. So that makes me a little wary of Royal Decree. On the one hand, I do want to try some decks with, say, 2 Paper Shields, 2 Royal Decrees, but if my opponent has a Harrenhal on the board and characters at all, I really feel like that Royal Decree just becomes a dead card, because then I'm giving them 2 power for their event I wanted to cancel to still go off anyway. It definitely has some situations where it becomes dead even earlier than your opponent being, say, 13 power. So I think really that probably means it's a fairly balanced card at the moment.
Yep, I'd have to agree with you. So, Kyle, what kind of rating are you giving this bad boy?
I'll give it somewhere in the C+, B- range. I think it's solid. We'll touch on a lot of good points. I definitely feel like it's worth considering, and I do love Paper Shields, especially with some of the weird costed things we're getting these days, like Lannister especially having to kneel uniques for their counterplots and their Wheels Within Wheels. Paper Shield is definitely a solid, probably my favorite of the 3, but this definitely, I think, overtakes Hand's Judgment, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it probably does as well, and I definitely have to say, now that we've got Dark Wings, Dark Words out, you know, any D-dub deck really loves Royal Decree. You know, just any of these neutral, strong effect events that can just be thrown in as one-shots are great. So I think it might even see a little more play thanks to those decks than it would have otherwise. So I'm willing to give it... I'm going to go with a B-.
A universal effect, or a universal event that can be played in every deck that cancels any event can be incredibly powerful. Incredibly powerful. Obviously, cost 2 is nothing to sneeze at, as Will would say. I'm going to... Oh, geez, I want to give it an A. That's Neil's 3 influence for his Hatchling's Feast, and you're like, eat that. Oh, geez, I'll give it a B. I'll give it a B so I don't look stupid, but I want to give it an A.
Just do it, Daryl.
Screw it. I'm giving it an A. It's absurd cancellation of an event can totally save your ass. There. I did it.
Hey, Cam.
All right. Last card? No, second to last card.
Yep.
We've got another event. It is Heads on Pikes. It is prized 1. It says any phase. Each opponent discards the top 2 cards from his or her deck for each character in his or her dead pile. Limit 1 per round. I really like this. I really like Mill. We already have Nightmares in the North that happens, I believe, in the dominance phase. So this plus that could be pretty fun. Competitiveness, probably not right now, but could be decent. I hate that it's limit 1 per round, but I mean, I get it with all the crazy wonky stuff we saw beforehand with all the infinite combos and stuff. I mean, I get it. Now, granted, it was designed probably before that, all that stuff went down, but I can get it now. I can see why you would limit something like that, is what I mean.
It definitely would have been before then. But, I mean, I don't know. The one mass kill that you're going to see is going to be Valor, which means it's probably... I don't know. I don't know how quickly you're going to get the cards in your opponent's dead pile in order to trigger heads on pikes really efficiently. Nightmares in the North, people, I will say, played around with for a little bit, and it went by the wayside. You know, this should discard a little faster, but is it enough yet? Especially since in Thrones you don't lose when you don't have any cards in your deck. I'm just not sure.
At the Iowa Regional, the Sheik, Adam DeWolf, an old time Thrones player, brought some silly mill deck, and I mean, he was decking the snot out of people. I believe he made top cut with it. I think his record was by turn three, plot phase turn three, he had milled out their deck. And I mean, you don't lose, but with Recursion definitely being down after all the FAQ hits, I mean, it would still be a blow to not have a deck. I mean, back to the days where that's a legit thing. I think for that, it's solid. And to see Mill get some cards and just one more flavor of deck out there, I would love to see Mill become a thing. It's a neat card, if only for that. I like seeing underdog archetypes get support, but I don't think you'll see a lot of play outside of that. It shouldn't see a lot of play outside of that.
Yeah. I've messed around with like some hardcore like Greyjoy Murder in the past, and I mean, you know, if I can kill like 12 characters or something by, you know, turn two or turn three or whatever, I don't know, after a Valor or something, like that's a shitload of cards. Two cards for every character, like, could be pretty fat. I'm gonna give it a C. Because I do think that eventually somebody's going to find a way, maybe a sweet late-game card, just to be like, all right, and now you don't have any cards in your deck. GG. So, could be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just sitting here trying to think about what in the world I would actually rate heads on pikes, you know? Sounds like something that's fun to experiment with. You know, the Shaga side of me says maybe it's time to try and make discard work again. So past experience tells me this is probably a D+ card. But I will reserve the right to throw that out later once people have had time to experiment with it.
What about when you experiment with it?
I'm a person. I am included in people.
Oh.
Oddly enough, my corporation is also a person.
Yes, it is.
Other uses outside of Greyjoy Mill include, we have Hugor Hill and the Kindly Man. And that's about all I can think of. So, the fact that I've come up with three total is better than the one I came up with for the dragon eggs. So, for that, I will give this a C-.
And there's a few things, like Slaver's Bay and Andric, right?
Stop.
Okay. Ooh, Ten Towers?
No. And we are done. We are done now. Whatever we were, we are no longer that.
All right, are we on to the final card?
Final card.
Here we go. This is the Aftermath. It is a plot. It's a 3-7-1, and it has prized one. At the end of the marshalling phase, each player chooses up to three characters he or she controls. All characters not chosen are discarded from play. Cannot be saved. And I just want to say up front, it has some really friggin' sweet art on it.
Yeah, that looks pretty dope.
Yeah.
When's that going to be a playmat?
I don't know. We can hope for Worlds, maybe? You got me. Send the idea in. Send the idea in. But yeah, as far as the effect goes, I mean, it is quite strong. It's yet another reset of sorts. A partial reset, you might say. But the timing on this one makes it so much more brutal than Wildfire, because it is after your opponent has already marshaled, or yourself as well. It keeps the board closer to parity there because of that. And since it's at the end of the phase, you can't be, using any save effects. Now, I mean, it says cannot be saved, but just saying it prevents some shenanigans there since you can't respond. Even say something like the Viper's Bannerman or the like. And of course, since it's timed there at the end of the marshalling phase, you can then go into challenges and you can ambush in something or use that sweet new Greyjoy warship that is literally in the same pack as the Aftermath to drop some more characters into play and get around it. You can jump something in and see who is stronger. There's several options. Shadows, of course.
I think the main thing about this card here, I feel, the fact that they're opening up another soft reset. You know, we talk about the idea of, like, maybe Valor, you know, or rotation, rather. Like, maybe at some point you don't see Valor, you know, being a legal target to play or something, or it gets restricted or something crazy in the future. Having more cards like this opens us up to not having that crutch constantly. Now, I realize, I'm the first person to say, hey, Valor, incredibly powerful card. Like, this game, as of right now, needs this card, like, to exist for now. But this gives me hope that maybe forever, not every plot deck will need Valor Morghulis in it. And it's real good.
The card game got by with Winter Storm, which was the exact same effect. Different stats, but the exact same effect as a sufficient reset for a while back in CCG. So, I mean, I loved the card then. Seeing it come back just brings me joy. Control players will love this. And maybe even some aggro players will run it where they feel like, I mean, I have a rule and I always run a reset because just you need to bail out when stuff hits a fan. And this is something that maybe aggro players will view as a softer Valor, but more efficient than Wildfire at getting everyone back to the same page. So definitely worth a look. It's a great card.
Yeah. And of course, you know, you can still get around it with some of the cannot be discarded guys. I've been thinking about more ways to get around it. And also, I don't know, there might have been two Bannermen in this pack that have the potential to be immune to plot effects. Sounds pretty sweet to me. Now, the question that occurs to me, though, is the potential too much now that we've opened up for decks who have Valor, Wildfire, and the Aftermath? And,
oh, totally.
And even, you know, First Snow of Winter if they want and the like.
That is a deck side set, but there's plenty of deck there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the meta right now, we took a good step forward in giving aggro a shot again, and now we're seeing a little more of a nod towards control again. Possibly. I don't know. Could it be a problem? Maybe. I mean, it'll annoy somebody whenever somebody comes with that deck that just, like, reset, you know. I don't know if it's a problem yet. Depends how the community utilizes it, I guess.
Yeah, I think it will be fairly popular myself, but we'll see. I don't know. I've long been a proponent of running the double resets and using Valor and Wildfire. Not too many other people have taken me up on that. I don't know how many will try Valor and the Aftermath, or how many will try the Aftermath on its own. So I think I'll kind of want to see how it all shakes out. But just looking at the power level of the aftermath by itself and some of the implications of being able to run all the resets makes me feel like it's a pretty strong card. Probably in, I'm tentatively going to go with the B plus range.
I'm going to go ahead and give it an A. I think that this is a really good reset and will completely and utterly take the place of Wildfire Assault. I guess, in my opinion, it's just better. Like, I know Wildfire kills them. This one discards them, but I still think that it's a better option. And I think Wildfire is a halfway decent card, so this is just better.
Yeah, Daryl's right. I mean, it's just a solid card all around. I think we'll see a lot of play. I think it'll be really, really popular. I'll give it an A. I'll give it an A right there with you.
Oh, we're crazy today. We're going crazy. I mean, yeah. I mean, this pack was really hard. There was a ton of cards, you know, that we came across. We're just like, oh my gosh, we don't know. And that is what I like to see every time we open up one of these packs. You know, it should be tough for us to judge how a card's going to be. We shouldn't automatically be able to write off a card as crap, or even just be able to say, man, this card's amazing. It should be kind of tough, you know. It should challenge us to come up with a way to use it. And utilize it and things like that. Like, that's fun. That's why we play card games, to be creative and make these sweet decks that do these cool things and stuff. So this was a great pack. It was really good.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of really cool stuff here, pushing some different ideas and different boundaries without just being totally over the top. So I like it.
Yeah.
Very creative. Well, Daryl, I think you said it. There's a lot of cards in here. They're not obvious how strong or weak they may be. And it will take some time and a lot of experimenting to find out all the neat uses for a lot of this stuff. So I look forward to it as a deck builder. Obviously now it's kind of trying to hone some things in for Gen Con, but between the gap between it and Worlds, I'm sure is going to be full of all kinds of weird things out there.
Yep. All right, one last thing. We've done it before. Community, if you differ on a card or anything like that, let us know. Or if you have the time to get out your own little ratings of cards, let us know. I'm really curious to know what everybody else thinks about it. All right, props and slops.
I'm going to prop us for being somewhat timely with this episode.
Yeah.
Normally, starter pack reviews take forever. I feel like we did pretty good.
I think you're right. We kept it rolling much better than normal. If we had started at our normal time, I think we'd be pulling in really close to the 11 o'clock ending time that I was shooting for this week. So
yeah,
I mean, you know, all told, surprisingly good for us.
It is. I mean, there's just so much you can say about the cards. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll try not to make this episode even longer by going on about why we go on longer.
We really just enjoy the sound of our own voices.
We do. We do.
Well, we don't talk during the week, so then we all get together and it's, you know, hey, how's it going? And
yep. It's true. We don't talk a lot during the week.
Yeah, we definitely wind up with a half hour of just like talking about random BS before we can ever actually start an episode.
That's right.
So we just imagine on Mondays to like get that out of our system. Like a Monday powwow for our Tuesday podcast recording.
I don't know if it would actually help us is the problem.
Yeah. We'd just talk.
Oh, it wouldn't. I just really want a powwow on Mondays.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I have a prop. I recently picked up a comic book. Did I already mention? I already mentioned all my comic book pickups and everything. Damn it. Well, I actually started to read one of those comic books.
Hey,
I'm
going to
prop that, and I remember the name of it. It's called Black Science. Dude, it's so good. It's really cool. It's about this like scientist and his family who have a... like a teleportation device that's like malfunctioning and it's sending them to like different, I don't know if it's just planets or different dimensions or whatever, but shit gets cray. It's called Black Science. Check it out. It's really cool.
Huh.
I have a prop. I got a little bit of time in on the Destiny beta this past week, and I really liked it.
Wait a sec. What system are you playing on?
The PS4.
Why the shit are we not playing together?
What?
So Darryl? I have a slop for Kyle.
Oh, God. Man. Getting slopped.
That's right.
But I liked it.
Boy.
Tyrion leads you around like a futuristic Russia. It's great.
Yeah.
I think I shot something, but mainly Tyrion leads me around Russia.
That's right. Yes. Peter Dinklage rules. I'm glad that he's super popular now.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
So, I was a fan before he was Tyrion.
I saw the magic when he was an elf. I just knew.
That's right.
Great things are coming.
And the man is ageless. The guy is like almost 40. Looks good. Good looking guy.
Sure.
Will, do you have a prop or a slop?
Yeah, I've got a prop to a Netflix original show that I watched. Some of you, i.e. my co-hosts, have already heard me raving about this before. But it recommended Knights of Cydonia to me, and it'd been a while since I had watched an anime, so I was like, you know what, whatever, it's a Netflix original, I'll sit down and see, you know, how decent it is. I'd had another friend mention it to me before, and so I went ahead and watched it on Saturday, and by watched it, I mean I binged the entire season. Which is kind of a glorious feeling. I haven't been able to do that with a show in a long time, and I have to say, it was totally worth it. It's, I would say, kind of a cross between Battlestar Galactica and Attack on Titan, but not as depressing as Attack on Titan. So
the show is good, Will.
Maybe one day I will attempt it again. We shall see. But it was just
nut up and finish it.
It was just so fucking depressing that
it
I just
is.
Gave up. Because, let's be honest, the message of that show, at least through the first half dozen episodes, is just give up. No one will ever win. Good will never overcome evil. Everybody will die. So you know what I did? I gave up on the series.
No,
and you picked up your Game of Thrones book.
Yes.
We're justice reigning supreme.
And you know what the message in Game of Thrones is?
What?
If you're a conniving bastard, you'll have all the power you want. i.e., I love Littlefinger.
Yeah.
Did you see they did like a, if the actors could give any piece of advice to their characters, what it would be, and whoever it is that plays him said, like, stay shady, like, don't care what people think, like, just do you.
Yeah, I had not seen that. I'm trying to think, Aiden something, I think is the name of the actor, though.
I don't know.
I was like, that's awesome, because, I don't know, like, there's so many ways you could take it and just be like, keep being that, like, sneaky badass, just do it.
Just roll with it.
You have the veil. Just, I mean, it's going well.
just keep doing your thing, man.
Yep.
Jeez. Oh, I have a prop. Unless I lost you guys just now.
Keep going.
I was like, nope.
Oh, jeez, I didn't hear you guys, so I was like, oh god, I lost you. Okay. I have a prop, and it is this might be, this is a shameless plug that I'm not trying to turn into one, but I am giving a prop to the guys who do music, that are letting me use their music for my new podcast. Really cool dudes. They are super guitar bros. They do, medleys from like video games and stuff. And, you can check them out on YouTube. They're really awesome. And the other guy is Rocco W, who does like chiptune music. And, he's really cool. And they're all really nice and they respond to my emails. Like, it was cool. So
I'm glad you found some friends.
Yeah, we're all friends now. They're my friends.
That's good.
I don't think we're friends. I don't know if I'd go that far.
You said that, Will. That's good. There's the right amount of condescending
like me.
With this, like, comforting. I don't want to shatter your world, but it's good.
But those guys don't give a shit about you.
Don't go there in the apocalypse. They will feed you to the zombies. Well, this was nice.
That's it. I don't have anything else. Does anyone else have anything?
No.
All right, well, wait. Will, were you about to say something?
Nope, I was just about to say that I do not. That's all.
I'm sorry, it's late. Well, thanks for listening to another fine-ass episode of Two Champs and a Chump. You can feel free to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/twochampsonechump. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/twochampsonechump. You can email us if you have any suggestions for the show or anything like that, or tell us how smelly we are at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. You can invite us to a hangout on Google Plus, and you can still subscribe to our Twitch channel or follow it at twitch.tv/twochampsonechump, because I swear to God, eventually we're going to do something on there, and it's going to be awesome. Maybe like some live interview stuff or something. Oh, that'd be so sweet.
That would be cool. Why don't we record, like, pre-record this little bit and just stick it at the end of the episode? Why do you make Daryl say it every goddamn time?
I don't make Daryl say it. He just says it.
I just say it. I don't know.
I don't know. It's nice not having it exactly the same every time.
Yeah, you never know when there's a tidbit in there you want to throw in about what was earlier in the episode.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's nice. And you know what else can be different every time?
Zone!
Son of a bitch.
Damn it.
Did that audio cut out, or did you purposely only say, Zone!
No, it cut out.
It's okay. I was saying what at the exact same moment. I was like, what?
Who cares? Whatever. Zone! I'm going to do that on purpose on the next one. That sounds amazing. Zone!
Just tell the listeners, you know what? In the interests of their valuable time, we decided the shows were just too long, and we had to cut wherever we could.
So got the danger.
Yep.
Dude, yes. The ghost who never goes away. Turn around and leave us behind now. See the ground as it leads to the sky now. Fight the sea, you're always gonna try.